wrong side to the slum. It was a dream, but now alhamdulillah, it's a reality. It's a reality.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. My name is Hussein Thomas. I've been Muslim about 10 years and I'm from South London.
I grew up in a council estate in Battersea named Surrey Lane. Most of you will know Romeo from So Solid. Him and his older brother live one floor below me. My mum's Jamaican and my dad's Haitian, but I don't know my father's side of the family. Basically, unfortunately, like a lot of men from the Caribbean, my father went AWOL. So, you know, typical story, the father, you know, basically disowned his responsibility. He left my mum, and it was me, my younger brother, my younger sister. I was the oldest. And I really believe that, you know, if a young boy doesn't have his father, you know, something gives way, because I started to take liberties because I never had a father around. I basically started to take liberties with my mum. I wouldn't do anything around the house. I would kiss my teeth when she would talk to me. I would slam the door in her face. You know, I said, turn up music when she's talking to me. I just pretended she wasn't there. And basically, at first when I was small, she used to beat me to keep me in check and stuff like that. And as I grew up, I just got worse and worse. And I would do things like, if my brother had a toy, a Walkman, or anything, I would just take it off him, you know what I'm saying? If he got a bicycle or something, I would just take it off him. Whatever he had was basically mine, so I basically terrorised him. As we got older, we moved from Battersea, which was like a grey dog council estate with urine in the lifts and spit on the on lift buttons and stuff like that. We moved to Wandsworth. It was a nice area. We moved to a house because we were on a waiting list for about 10 years or something. And the environment, the place where we lived was a bit better than Battersea, but it was too late for me, or it didn't have any effect on me, because I started at such a young age being rude that I just carried on. And plus, because I got older, the beats didn't hurt me anymore for my mum, so I was just became more and more unruly, and I would do things like coming at, what is it, 2 or 3 o'clock at night. You know, I'd knock on the door because I would lose my keys somewhere, and if no one opened the door, then I'd throw a stone up at my brother's window. And we had this unwritten agreement that, you know, when I throw a stone up at the window, because he slept right at the bed by the window, you know, the longer it took him to come down and open the door, the longer the beats would be, and the harder the beats would be in the morning. So anyway, I just basically carried on. And from when I was living in Battersea, my mum used to turn to me, and I used to see tears in her eyes, you know, like from her breaking down, from losing hope, with not being able to keep being in check and so forth. Like one time I even went to school, I didn't go to school. And then when I went to school, the next time I went into school, they asked me why I didn't come. I said, oh, my mom beat me, because I knew it would get into trouble with social services, and she got in trouble and stuff like that. So I just took liberties. But anyway, as I got older, I started hanging around with these people, getting older and so forth, my mum would turn to me, tears her eyes, and just say, look, Jason, what are you doing? You don't respect me, you don't listen to me, you slam the door in my face, you kiss your teeth, you know what I'm saying, you spit on the floor in front of me and stuff like that. Like, if you carry on doing this, I'm going to kick you out. And I, deep down inside myself, because I knew my mum loved me, I just thought, yeah, whatever. I just kept on doing it more and more, because I knew she loved me, and I just thought, I'm just going to take liberties, you know, because who's going to stop me? You know, and this carried on. Then one day I come home, you know, and there's 2 black bags outside. So I thought, boy, my brother's slipping, because he must have forgot to take the rubbish out and put them in a little dustbin shed, because, you know, that's because I don't do no work around here. So, you know, he needs to sort himself out and start helping around, because, you know, I ain't gonna put that out. So anyway, I knock on the door as normal, you know, no one opens the door, you know, and this is about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So then what I do, I throw the stone up at the window, and normally my brother opens it up straight away, but he didn't open it up this time. So I'm thinking, what's going on? So I start making fits and say, boy, Richard, you better come open the door. I want to beat the hell out of you. Come downstairs. And now I start like shouting at him loud. The neighbors start looking out and this, that, and the other, and so forth. So I start kicking in the door and stuff like that, punching at the door. And then what happens, my mum, because there was a balcony in the house, so what happened, my mum come out and she said, look, Jason, I'm sorry. I've dealt with this for years and years and years and years. Can't take it anymore. Them 2 black bags outside the house, they're your belongings. I'm sorry, I'm not opening the door. If you kick anymore, I'm gonna call the police. Richie's not opening the door, Rishan, or your little sister's not opening the door, I'm sorry, you're kicked out, and I'm not opening the door for you, and I mean it this time. So what happens, I start arguing more, but then the neighbours, they start arguing with me and saying, why are you making noise, we have to work with this, that and the other, and my mum was serious about calling the police. So from that stage I was homeless, and then basically, so I was staying at different people's friends' house, but then their mums would say, why don't you go home, and so forth, and then, you know, try and stay at this person's hostel and so forth, and basically, I was homeless for about a year, and you know, it was a really rough time because, you know, I went down to about, was it like 6, 7, 8 stone and so forth, and it was just like, there was, you know, it was times when I would lose consciousness and stuff like that. My clothes became too big for me and baggy and stuff because I was literally nowhere to go because of, you know, I'd really ruined things with my mother and my relatives and stuff like that, and they had patience for years, and this was it, the end. So one day I was in Ballymore Cap himself, you know, and I was like really, really faint, you know, and saying, like I said, I'll lose conscious and so forth, and then come back around and so forth. And there was like a blue office, you know, it was in between Ballam and Clapham South. So what happened is that I walk in there, it was basically a little clinic place, or like a little office for young single mothers, or pregnant teens or something. So I walk in and there was a lady in there. And I said, look, I need your help. I'm homeless. You know, all my relatives have disowned me. I'm living basically outside. I need your help. If I don't get any help, or I don't find somewhere to stay, I might die out there. I literally have nowhere to stay. So the woman said to me, oh, I'm not really dealt or equipped to deal with, you know, homeless people. I deal with, you know, young mothers and pregnant teens and so forth. I said, look, but I need your help. What am I going to do? Look at me. You can see the state of me. I need your help. I can't go outside. If you don't help me, I might die out there, you know. So what happened is she said, look, I can't really help you. I'll try and make some phone calls and I'll see what I can do. So she spent about an hour on the phones, and after she said, look, I couldn't really do much for you. I've arranged a meeting for you with some people, and they're gonna interview you, and they're gonna see if they maybe can find you a shelter for the night, or you know, or a place to stay, you know, for you to like sleep a day or so. So the meeting was about 2 weeks away, and I made it to a meeting. I can't remember much about the meeting. All I can remember, there was a man, there was a woman, and at the end of it, they put a key in my hand. And basically, they gave me like a I had like a bedsit, or, you know, a little place. And I was happy. I was proper over the, like, I just, you know, from going out, you know, not having nowhere to sleep, you know, sometimes I was so slim and ill that sometimes I looked at a bin and I contemplated, should I put my hand in there and pick out something to eat? Like, it was that bad. And to actually have a place, a roof, you know, I was happy. So anyway, now this, I was around, what was it, 15, 16, and now I have my own place. And around that time, I met one of my old friends who I used to go to secondary school with, and I started hanging out with him, and he started hanging out with me, and then what happened, he introduced me to his friends and so forth, and then used to hang out on a estate in Wandsworth called Henry Prince Estate, and on Garrett Lane, and then basically I started hanging out with him, and you know, this, I had total freedom at this time. I could walk, wear what I want, I could watch what I want, I could bring around what I want, I could smoke what I want, I could drink what I want, I could do whatever I want. So what happened, I started linking up with his friends and hanging around with him on the estate, and then I saw, you know, because we was at, has what's 15, 16, around these age 17, and then what happened, there was olders, you know, because they were kind of like, he had these older friends. And I looked up to these older guys because they had like convertibles, they had motorbikes, they had, in them days they had big chops, they called it, gold around their wrist and around their, you know, around their neck and so forth. And basically I was like thinking, this is a life of fun. These guys, they don't work, they don't go to college, you know what I'm saying? They have no responsibility, they're young, they just rave, smoke, you know what I'm saying? They get into fights with other different crews and stuff like that. And yeah, they just do what they want. So I started hanging around with them, and at that time, You know what I'm saying? And they started to come to my place. So I would hang out, smoke weed, you know, wake up in the morning. Yeah. The first thing I'd do, I would have my music set right next to me. Before, you know, my eyes even opened up, you know what I'm saying? I would press play, you know, listen to some Tupac, Biggie and all this kind of stuff. So it's just life. So anyway, after a while of hanging around with these guys, I want to know, how did you get cars? How did you get the motorbike? How did you get, you know, the Versace machine at the end days? That's what it was. I was like, how do you get it if you don't work and stuff like that? So they said they're going to show. So anyway, one day, I went with them and they basically showed me how they made money. So they would go into somewhere like a news agent or something. What they do, they pick up like a polo, you know what I'm saying, and a can of Coke or something, and they give the person a pound. And that person would take their pound, they would basically take their pound, press the till to open, and then they would attack them. You know what I'm saying? They would attack them, and bum rush them, yeah? And then basically until the person was out of it. And then what they would do is they would take the two trays out of the till. You know, the one on top had coins and the one underneath notes. And they would do other things like wait for business people to come home from like Elsford train station, coming from Liverpool Street or Clapham Junction or somewhere. And they would just wait for business people to come home and either rob them, you know, or rob them just outside their house. So they used to do a mixture of things to make money. So me hanging around with these people, after a while, I just said, I want it. You know what I'm saying? They've got the, you know, they've got the latest machine on Versace and this, that. I want it too. So I started hanging around, in them days we had olders and younger, so I started hanging around with them. And I started doing what they're doing the shops and so forth. So anyway, if you do a lot of crime, you're going to obviously get in trouble with the law. So what happened, I started going in and out of a police station, in and out of court, you know, and then I started doing, what is it, probation. It's people sitting down talking to you, why are you doing these things, why are you hurting people and taking their money? It's that after you do probation, you go to community service, paint a fence, help out the community, do all these things. You know, after you keep on doing it, there comes a stage when you eventually you go jail. So anyway, I go jail and, you know, I'm waiting to go. It's my first time being in jail. So I'm there for a very short time and they give me bail. They say, look, okay, you've been in jail for a little while. We're going to give you bail and we're going to let you out. So they let me out. You know, while it's out, I've robbed a businessman coming home from work and they put me back in. And they said, this time, you're not going nowhere. You're waiting in jail until, you know, what is it, your trial. Unfortunately, the first person I robbed, while I was waiting for his trial to basically come, it kept on getting postponed because may, you know, God forgive us, Allah forgive us, but we attacked him very bad. So every time I was supposed to go to trial, the case got put back because he couldn't attend because he had heart failure and he was in critical condition. So I kept getting pushed back until I did about a year in jail. So anyway, one of them days, when I was living in Battersea, this is how I got introduced to Islam. One of these days when I was at my mum's house being rude and, you know what I'm saying, and being, how can I say, being disrespectful and kissing my teeth and slamming the door in the face and listening to my music, my cousin came around. So my cousin came around, but he looked different. He had a beard, he was wearing a long robe, you know what I'm saying, and he just seemed a bit different. So I asked him, I said, what happened to you? And he said he's become a Muslim. So I was really confused, you know what I'm saying? Because my cousin, he's darker skinned than me. So I was thinking, how can you become an Asian? You know, and I was wondering, look, you're still black. How can you become an Asian? You know, are you going to paint yourself lighter or whatever and so forth? So my cousin, you know, obviously he sat me down and explained to me that a Muslim is not a race of people, you know what I'm saying? It's a belief. You know, and he told me, you know, that there's many different religions in the world, like our family were Jamaican Christians. You know, he said there's many different religions in the world and they all tell you to do good, give charity, you know, be nice to old people, be nice to your parents, help the poor. But he said when you take time out to look into the religions and see what they're worshipping, they're all worshipping a man or a statue or animal or something that's created. And he said Islam's the only religion that tells you to worship God alone, not to worship a man, not to worship a statue, not to worship an animal. Or if these other religions don't make God like a man, statue, animal, any of these things, they give God human thoughts like getting hungry, getting thirsty. Like God created the world in 7 days, you know, and then 6 days, then he rested, you know, God got tired and like sat down and just got tired and stuff. So he said all these other religions, they just either worship things that God created or they give God human weakness. Islam's the only one that says God is perfect, he doesn't become man, he doesn't become statue, he doesn't become animal, he doesn't become any of these things, and he doesn't get hungry, thirsty, tired, or anything. And I said to him, because even though I was a rude guy, you know what I'm saying, kissing my teeth, slamming my door, listening to, you know, my music and this, that, and the other, I thought that's what we believed as Christians. I thought we believed that Moses, Jesus, you know, Noah, all these people came and told people to worship God. And the people who disbelievers were the people that worship idols. But he said to me, no, our family, our Jamaican family, they believe Jesus is God. I goes, no, they don't. We don't believe Jesus is God. So anyway, I went to my mum and I spoke to my mum. And I said, Mum, look, we believe that Jesus was all these people, they came to tell people to worship God, ain't it? And she said, no, son, we actually believe in the Trinity, that there's sometimes God is the Father in heaven, sometimes it's the Holy Spirit, and sometimes it's Jesus the man. You know, and even though it's this guy being rude, listening to my rap music and swearing, you know, and slamming door, kissing my teeth and stuff like that, I never believed that. I never, you know, they never told us to school in detail and stuff like that. So from that moment there, when my mum told that Jesus was God, this man who used to pray, you know, this man that was a baby and Mary used to look after him, this man, you know, that basically, used to tell people to worship God, I stopped believing it because, you know, we know the story about Jesus was a baby in a cradle and that people looked after him and this, that, and the other. So how could that be the creator of the universe? How could Mary look after God Almighty? How could Mary carry God, you know, around in her stomach, you know, for 9 months? I couldn't believe it. So I stopped, basically, what happened? I stopped believing from that point. I didn't become Muslim, but I stopped believing that life. But my cousin, he never lived here. When he came over and told me that was only about like 5 minutes, 10 minutes. He just gave me a brief talk, told me why I was Muslim, you know, basic explained Tawheed to me. So anyway, he left, went back to Yemen or Morocco, and you know, wherever he was living. And then I just kept on living my life. I got kicked out by my mum. I started hanging around with these guys. I had my own place, smoking, drinking, raving, getting a few arms here and there, fights and so forth. And then I end up in jail. So I'm in jail now. And basically, you know, I'm thinking, why am I here for? I've been in jail prison for about nearly a year now. I'm going up for trial, thinking, what are we here for? You know, initially, when I started hanging around with these guys, they're smoking the weed, you know, they're going raving, they're getting a new of the to your off key machine or shirts and stuff. It was exciting at first because I'd never done it. I'd never been to a rave, I'd never smoked a spliff, I said, hi, girlfriend, this, that, and that. So it was exciting at the beginning. But after you've been doing it for years, it becomes dead. You know, the girls are cheap, you can't trust them. You can't trust them, you know what I'm saying? You get a new shirt, the latest one, and then a better one comes out. There's that, and someone's, you've got a big rep, someone's got a bigger rep than you. So I knew it was unattainable. You know, I knew people from the elders that would, you know, beat up enough man and then would get stabbed once and then everyone would forget that. So I just knew it was, I knew that this, I couldn't get to the top of this. So I started thinking, what's the purpose of life? So then I started to remember when I was in jail, what my cousin said. And I said, yeah. That thing where he's saying that there's one God, you know what I'm saying, and that basically, you know, God is not like a man or a woman. And I believe that, you know what I'm saying? I was thinking to myself, at the end of the day, if there's a God, if my cousin's praying and he's doing all this stuff and so forth, you know what I'm saying, and after a lot of bad things, you know what I'm saying, there's going to be a time when I'm going to be questioned about what I did. So I started, what I basically did, you know, this is what made me become Muslim. I looked at my, I read the Bible, I read the Quran, I looked at my Christian family, and I looked at my cousin. And I could see my cousin, he had a beard, like the prophets do in the Bible. He fell down his face and prayed like the prophets do in the Bible. You know what I'm saying? His wife used to dress like Mary in a hijab and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? He didn't used to eat pork, he didn't used to drink alcohol, he never used to rave. All the prophets, they never did, they did any of this stuff in the Bible. You know what I'm saying? Then I would look at my church, like my family, when they go to church, all they do is guys sing songs and this, that, and the other. And other churches, they need to jump up and down, get saxophone, get piano, get tambourines. And I thought, where in the Bible do you find Jesus and the disciples go somewhere, yeah, and get jiggy with it and start dancing around and worshipping God? You don't really find it. You just find them praying humbly, like the Muslims wearing a robe, having their beards, the women dressing in hijab and stuff like that. And I said, listen, the closest people that, you know, that look to be following the prophets and believing in one God, which I do, I believed it, or always believed in hell, always believed in paradise, you know what I'm saying, always believed in the day of judgment. I just didn't know how it applied to me, you know. So then I said to me, at the end of the day, look, this life of following the rappers and the smoking and drinking and this, that, and the other doesn't fulfill me anymore, you know what I'm saying. I've done a lot of stuff, I haven't got caught for it, I'm going to get held accountable. So I thought, you know, if there's a way of life that's right, I might not be a good Muslim, but I believe in what they believe in. And I might not be the best Muslim anymore, I might not be a good Muslim, but I'm gonna at least admit that I don't wanna be a Christian, I don't wanna be a Hindu, I don't wanna be a Sikh, and I wanna follow that way. I don't know how I'm gonna get there. I'm at the moment smoking weed, listening to Tupac. I don't know how I'm gonna get there, but I know that's the truth. You know, because I ain't got no degrees, I ain't got no qualifications like that. I know that there's one God, he's not a man, he's not a statue, he's not an animal, and so forth. And that's what I was willing to die on, you know. So basically, after reading the Quran and the Bible, looking at my Christian Jamaican family and my cousin, I just decided, yeah, I bear witness that there's no God that has the right to be worshipped except Allah, who's not a man, a woman, a statue, or an animal. And that Prophet Muhammad, Moses, Jesus, and Noah, they were all messengers of Allah.
Okay, Aki, you told us a little bit about how your life was before Islam. Can you tell us how Islam has changed your life?
I'm happy that I became Muslim because I'm a happy person now, sincerely happy person now. Before, every morning when I woke up, I needed a spliff and I needed music. I would be unhappy if I couldn't have hair music and have a spliff. I was wretched. I was irritated. I was a very annoyed, bad, very unpleasant person to be around. So now that I'm free from weed and music and so forth, and also I found myself doing stuff that I'll never be able to do before. If you told me in jail, when I was in jail smoking weed, listening to Tupac and this, that, that I would actually be going, you know, I would actually, was it not be smoking, you know, I say, be learning to speak Arabic, you know what I'm saying, would be working, would be, how can I say, married and so forth. You like, I would never believe it. I would never be able to do these things. But then I had these things, you know, through Islam. I talked to different Muslims about Islam. I go to university, colleges, this, that, and the other, you know, lots of different things. So Islam's just happy for me. And one of the best things is that my mum loves me, and she also loves Islam because she knows not prison, not the church, not anyone else could change me. And the only thing that stopped me, you know, was Islam and Allah. And me, she got her son back now, and she never had her son back before, you know. So alhamdulillah, you know, praying, working, marriage, you know what I'm saying. And also just the way I walked down the street, before I used to go to the shop, and then used to use my race and stuff to intimidate the man around the corner. If I'll be in a car or something, listen to some rap beats, screwing everyone, you know, I'll cut man up on the road and still screw him and think, like, and what? You know, and so forth, and just my whole way now. I hate bullies. I hate people who rob people. I hate people that who attack people. Islam has just made me more civilized and a better human being. You know, I can actually say now I'm a creation of God who walks on the earth humbly, and I don't want problems with anyone. I just want to worship my Lord, work, pray, and be a good person.
Now, what advice have you got to Muslims and non-Muslims regarding Islam?
Okay, to the non-Muslims, basically I would say, you know, this the sun, the moon, the stars, this planet, it's not an accident, you know? A BMW can't come about by chance, a phone can't come about by chance, so this universe, which is more complex, can't come about by chance. To the non-Muslim men, I would say, look, at the end of the day, you're never gonna be the top of this, you know, this guy, you're never going to be the biggest, the most famous, the most rich. There's always going to be someone with more. So this dream of trying to, you know, be the henchman, trying to be, have the most girls, the most rep, the this, that, it's not achievable, yeah? No one has ever reached at the top before they died. So I would just say to you, get the Quran, read it, and ask yourself, is this a speech of God directly to man? Read the Quran and just judge for yourself. Have an informed choice and choose whether you think it's the truth. Same thing with the women. You know that this universe, you know what I'm saying, is not an accident. You know, it's not a fluke. It's not a joke. Yeah? So at the day, a man didn't create this universe. A woman didn't create this universe. A monkey or an idol or statue didn't create this universe. It's a supreme being, a supreme power. Yeah? We call that Allah. You know there has to be more to life than looking pretty, because there's always going to be someone more pretty. And walking down the high street and turning man's head, like, there's always going to be someone prettier, there's always going to be someone wearing less clothes, there's always going to be someone more attention. You can't, it's impossible to reach the top, you'll die before you reach the top, and you can't reach the top anyway, because there'll always be a bigger, another creation of course that's more pretty or better looking. So you can't reach that, so you read the Quran, yeah? Ask yourself, if the purpose of life ain't about putting makeup on and turning guys' heads on the high street, then what is the purpose of life? Must be more to it. And to the Muslims, My advice to you is you're only one of two people. You're only one of two people. Either you're someone who, either you believe in Islam or you don't. If you're a Muslim and you believe in Islam and you believe that Day of Judgment is there, Paradise is there, Hellfire is there, and Allah is, you know, is real, then you can live life either or two ways. Block out anything Islamic and pretend the smoking, the drinking, the listening to music and the raving and stuff is all cool. And just avoid Islamic people and Islamic places and pretend everything's fine, you know, and think because you're not reading about the Day of Judgment, you're not reading about Hellfire and Paradise, that doesn't apply to you. But it does apply to you. So all you can do is block it out and pretend it doesn't exist, and when you die and wake up and realise that it's real, you're finished. Or you can try, and like, none of us are perfect. The bed doesn't come overnight, the trousers above the ankle over the trousers above the ankle don't come overnight. The hijab, the niqab, whatever, it doesn't come overnight. It's a struggle, you know, you struggle, fight, slip, get over it. Struggle, fight, slip, get over it. So either you're a Muslim who's trying, yeah, to please Allah who makes mistakes, you know, but keeps on trying, or you're someone who just totally gives up. I myself, as a Muslim, who was, you know, who was, as a non-Muslim, who was smoking, drinking, robbing people, does that, when I read about Hellfire, and I read about Paradise, and I read about Judgment Day, and I read about, like, the size of Angel Jabul, that he has 600 wings, and he cut the whole of the horizon, I believe in it. I know I cannot be on this earth robbing from people, hurting people. I can't handle the punishment for it. So I have to start, you know, working. I have to start being good. I have to start not hurting Allah's creation. Why? Because the reality is I can't handle it if I go into Hellfire, and I'm scared of the Hellfire, I'm scared of Judgment. Like, I'm not ashamed of saying that. So if you think that you can go around stabbing up Last Creation, shooting the Last Creation, you know, sleeping with the Last Creation, breaking their hearts and throwing away, then keep on doing it. If you think you could just go around, keep walking down the street half naked, turning man's heads and disobeying Allah, pretend does it, do it. I personally can't do it, so I'm trying with my mistakes, yeah, to be a better Muslim. And that's the only advice I would give you. Either you're going to try to follow Islam, or you're just going to give up and do what Shaitan says. I'm trying, and I have mistakes, but I'll still try until I die, inshallah.